business.
The military-industrial complex, past their prime. America's giant arms makers are being outgunned.
Arms making is not like other businesses. It is impervious to macroeconomics and sheltered from fickle consumer tastes. Its prospects are determined by one factor, how militarily threatened its government consumers are feeling. With wars blazing in Ukraine and Gaza, another on the brink between Israel and Lebanon, and more conflict looming as China eyes Taiwan, the perceived threat level as leaders of NATO countries gathered for a summit in Washington from July 9th to 11th was through the roof. Last year, NATO's 32 members spent $1.3 trillion on defence, a record high after adjusting for inflation at least since the fall of the Soviet Union. America, by far the biggest spender, is budgeting $842 billion this year. Historically, more peacenik Europeans, spooked by Russian tanks on their doorstep, are undoing decades of stinginess that has resulted in accumulated underinvestment in equipment of about $600 billion. This year, NATO expects 18 members to meet the target of dedicating 2% of GDP to defence, up from 3% in 2014. Not all of this money is going on kit. Soldiers must be paid, bases operated and gear maintained. But last year, 28% of NATO's collective defence budget, or around $360 billion, was spent on weapons systems, vehicles and other major equipment. That was more than double the share 10 years ago. And the sums will continue to grow. Charles Woodburn, the chief executive of BAE Systems, the British maker of the Typhoon fighter, among other things, foresees a long runway of increased defence spending. This sounds like a bonanza in the making, especially for America's prime contractors at the heart of the military-industrial complex. American giants such as Lockheed Martin, RTX and Northrop Grumman dwarf their European rivals in terms of sales. The lion's share of the $315 billion that the Pentagon plans to spend on procurement and research and development, R&D, this year will end up in their pockets. Lockheed alone raked in sales of $68 billion last year. Instead, American defense bosses appear subdued, and not just because no one likes war. Their firm's market values have barely risen since Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022. Lockheed, RTX and Northrop have all done worse than the S&P 500 index of big American firms, which they had outpaced for decades, even as European counterparts have gone ballistic. The share price of Thales of France is up by 82% in the period. BAE's has doubled. That of Rheinmetall, a German firm, has more than quintupled. The age-old gap between the valuations of American and European arms makers, measured as a ratio of market value plus net debt to gross operating profit, has narrowed, calculates George Zhao of Bernstein, a broker. One explanation for the prime's underperformance is that they are stretched. As Ron Epstein of Bank of America points out, there are capacity constraints across the board. After the Cold War, Western defence budgets dwindled, procurement decisions were put on hold, and the industry scaled back production. Following the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, America's priorities swung towards counter-terrorism, leading to a slow decline in the manufacturing of hardware. China's maritime saber-rattling in the Pacific moved America's strategic emphasis away from land systems, such as armoured vehicles. No one thought to add capacity to supply a ground war in Europe. Such capacity will take years to restore, and this will happen only if companies can be assured of continued demand. As Mr. Woodburn of BAE explains, defence firms need a reasonable business case to put the balance sheet to work. And that business case is, for now, clearer in Europe than in America. A year ago, BAE struck a deal to replenish the British Army's stock of artillery shells. Last month, Rheinmetall won a contract for munitions from the German government worth up to 8.5 billion euros, $9.2 billion. Meanwhile, America's already gargantuan military budget is barely growing. A fiscal responsibility law enacted last year could freeze spending in real terms until 2033. Procurement and R&D are set to fall in real terms next year. In April, the chief executive of Northrop Grumman, Kathy Warden, warned of slower top-line growth in American defense spending in the short term. Lockheed sales last year grew by a meagre 0.8% in nominal terms compared with 2021 and fell by perhaps one-ninth after adjusting for inflation. The prime's problems also have to do with changes to how and what the Pentagon buys and whom it buys from. The Department of Defense, DOD, has long talked about squeezing more value for money from its procurement. Now it is actually doing something about it. Fixed-price deals are replacing cost-plus ones, whereby the state would cap companies' profits from production but underwrite their R&D costs. The model, in which companies bid to develop a weapons system for a specified fee and bear the risk of cost overruns, has caused Northrop Grumman and Boeing, a plane maker with a large defense arm, to lose billions of dollars. The danger of over-optimistic bids prompted Jim Taiclet, boss of Lockheed Martin, to declare in January that his company, which used to make it a point of pride to bag certain contracts, no longer has any must-win programs. The DoD's frugal new ways are combining with a fresh emphasis on nimbler, smart systems rather than main battle tanks, nuclear submarines, stealth fighters and the like. This combination, in turn, is attracting competition in a market that the primes had previously more or less stitched up. One more reason for the old-school contractors' relative retreat. Palmer Luckey, founder of Anduril, a seven-year-old startup in Silicon Valley which makes autonomous drones and other software-driven systems, says that the Pentagon is at last embracing non-traditional defense firms. He contrasts his company, a cost-efficient, fast-moving guy, with cost-irresponsible primes, whose main skills seem to be understanding the labyrinth procurement process. Anduril can now compete for almost any defense contract by putting its own capital at risk, he says. And, he adds, it no longer employs more lobbyists than engineers, as it did in the early days. Anduril's most significant victory came in April, when in concert with General Atomics, another newish arms maker, it beat Boeing, Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman in a contest to develop the Collaborative Combat Aircraft, a self-flying aeroplane for the US Air Force. Other newcomers are notching up wins too. In March, the US Army chose Palantir, a technology firm founded in Silicon Valley and now based in Colorado, to develop Titan, a lorry stuffed with software to process battlefield data. The following month, Sierra Nevada, another startup, was chosen over Boeing for a $13 billion contract to replace the E-48 Doomsday aircraft, which can serve as an airborne command post for the president and senior officers in the event of a nuclear attack. It would be foolish to count the primes out. Long-standing legacy programs such as the Lockheed F-35 fighter jet have years to run. Even Mr. Luckey concedes that cost-plus deals will endure for complex systems such as aircraft carriers and submarines. The primes remain the masters of both the engineering and the paperwork involved in these. In April, Lockheed won a $17 billion contract to develop a system to shield America from ballistic missiles. They are also likely to benefit from ballooning defense budgets abroad. American firm sales to foreign governments rose by 16% in 2023 to a record $238 billion. Uncle Sam may yet loosen the purse strings too. Already, money is coming through supplementals, additions to annual appropriations requested by the president. In April, Congress approved $95 billion, mostly for Ukraine and Israel. Perhaps a quarter of that will go directly to the primes. Donald Trump, who in his first term presided over large increases in military spending, may do so again if he returns to the White House next year. Steve Grundman of the Atlantic Council, a think tank in Washington, foresees real terms increases in total military expenditure of around 4% annually in the coming years. No match for the soaring budgets of the Cold War, but reasonable. And though they may prefer multi-billion dollar platforms with 30-year lifespans, the primes are also perfectly capable of developing smaller smart systems, notes Mr. Grundman. If armed forces' appetite for such kit keeps growing, the primes will not sit idly by. But they are no longer the only big guns in town.